Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show here on WGSO, 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. I am your host. Happy to be here today. Got a good show lined up for you today. If you're tracking things on Facebook, wall-to-wall guests today. So we are just going to jump right in. One thing I am going to mention real quick out of the gate, it is the last Jazz in the Park concert at Armstrong Park, free concert. Starts at 4 o'clock with the DJ, 5 o'clock with the incredibly famous and wonderful drummer Shannon Powell, and the headliner starting at about 6:30 is Dwayne Dubsey and the Zydeco Hellraisers. Check that out, Armstrong Park. It's free. And I am now pleased to be joined by two great guests, Leora Madden of Pearl Wine Company. That's what I'm trying to say.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi. How are you? And Henri Banaginer from Clos du Caveau, a winery all the way out there from the Southern Rhone region. Henri, welcome.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Bienvenue.
Merci.
De rien, de rien. We're going to go back to English here because I've just pretty much tapped out on my French. Doesn't go much further than that. Henri, you're here visiting us in New Orleans. Your winery is Clos du Caveau in the Vaucouleurs region of France.
Yes, I'm in the heart of Provence, just north of Aix, half an hour north of Avignon.
Okay.
On the hillsides. The Rhone used to be a glacier, so it's all flat, the Rhone Valley, and then on either side you have hills, and I'm on the first hills.
Okay. Great. Now, you were telling me the winery, your father started the winery.
My father purchased the winery in 1976, but he didn't start it. The previous owner is quite well known. He's the editor of Decanter magazine, and he's also very well known because a couple of months after selling the Clos, he did The Judgment of Paris, which some of you may have seen in Bottle Shock.
Mm-hmm.
Where he had the audacity, the nerve, the outrageous thing to compare some excellent French wines with a few California wines. And in one of the blind tastings, one of the California wines did really, really well.
Yes, actually, I think a couple of them did, but one of them didn't want to be part of the movie, so you don't get that, you don't get that part of the story. But anyway, moving along from that, go rent Bottle Shock and then go read about it, Google it if you want. So, Henri, it's a fascinating winery that you have. You're organic, and you're one of the pioneers of the organic winery movement in France.
Yeah, it started in the late 70s, early 80s. My father was suffering from a particular form of arthritis, and he had a hard time walking, and he was a very stubborn man. So he decided he was going to change doctor every 6 months until he was cured. So it was quite a traditional household with steak à la crème and all kinds of French foods, was full of cream and butter and everything. And after 2 years, he ended up in a less traditional doctor in Lausanne, in Switzerland, natural medicine. And all of a sudden, there was a revolution around the table. My mother started doing steamed vegetables, you know, raw oils, cereals, all those things which had really surprised us at the time. And we didn't know there was a revolution in the household. But my dad got better, and so did the vines.
Wow. That's amazing. So, I mean, it was a holistic then approach to lifestyle.
Yeah. It was a different approach to his pains and aches, and it cured him. And when he realized he was doing so much better, he stopped using pesticides and insecticides and all that stuff that it was readily available at the time and readily used. Although, to be fair, our region has a wonderful wind, which is called the Mistral, which is very dry. It comes from the north, and it blows all the clouds away, and it's dry. So after the rain, we have the Mistral, which works like a hairdryer and cleans the air. So we have very, very little or not at all problems with humidity, as in rot, oidium, mildew, stuff like that. So the area of Provence is famous for the quality of its fruit and vegetables for hundreds and hundreds of years because of this wind.
Now, are you located in an area? I know that parts of or your neighbors where you do get some the influence of the Mediterranean as well, or is it almost all continental weather in the terroir?
We have influence of the, when the wind comes from the south, the other wind is a wind from the sea, mm-hmm. and that brings humidity and rain, and it fights with the Mistral, and then the Mistral takes over, and we have blue skies again.
And during the growing
season.
We
also have sometimes winds from Africa, in that you will wake up in the morning, you'll go to your car, and there's a fine dusting of red dust from the Sahara that has crossed across the Mediterranean and landed in France.
Yeah, amazing. We actually get a little bit of that in the Caribbean, believe it or not, when it comes the other way on the trade winds. Yeah, interesting. So, and you were telling me something during the break, Henri, and I think something that the winery is known for. When you went to this organic process, it was something that was maybe perceived as different or perhaps even not trustworthy in your neighborhood. So you did not necessarily advertise this. This wasn't something like we do today where we're going to tell you it's 100% organic.
No, not at all. My dad used to be very specific. He would say, do not tell the clients. We sell and we sold at high-end restaurants, and it was not kosher at the time. And he would always say, you're going to scare them away. Don't mention it. And it was a very different period than now.
Absolutely. Now do you... is this a major part of your marketing outreach and things that you do now talk about organic?
Well, it came progressively. Maybe 20 years ago, I started having it in small print on the label because I had part of my clients which were from Northern Europe and interested in organic produce. And then I had the classical wine lists of high-end restaurants and stuff like that. And then little by little, organic became much less scary. And I remember about a decade ago, I had lunch with Stephen Spurrier, the guy who's editor of Decanter, and he said, Henry, it's no longer a problem. You can put it on the label in bold, in big print now. The divide is diminishing, disappearing.
Mm-hmm. There's a positive marketing aspect to this now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and let's do this real quick. One last question for you, Henri, before we take a break. Was your family in the wine business prior to purchasing the winery and the vineyard?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. My dad was a perfumer, Hubigant.
Ah, yeah.
He had always been interested in wine and had a very good nose. But at the time, he went to university in Toulouse and trained up there in 1975 before the purchase. And he learned.
There you go. By doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. And so tonight you all are doing a tasting at Pearl. Correct. And feel free to go ahead, Leora. You've been very
quiet. Yes. Free tasting tonight with Henri from 5 to 7 p.m. And get there early if you can, because the parking with the Crescent City Farmers Market can get a little crowded. But we'll also have Frenchie's food truck out front as well. And we've been looking forward to this tasting for a while. The first time I met Henri, I said we have to do a tasting here at Pearl, because I know that your story would resonate with people. But, I mean, the juice is incredible.
Excellent. Well, when we come back from the break, folks, we're going to get into the important part of tasting and talking about the wine. We've set the stage here, guys. So, and that's what we're going to do when we come back. So, folks, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. We're going to taste some wine. Come on back.
Breakfast is new to the menu at Dickie Brennan's Tableau. Stop by for Tableau's signature Eggs Benedict or order their famous bread pudding pan perdu. Tableau now offers brass brunch on Saturdays and Sundays beginning at 10 a.m. Listen to the rhythmic sounds of a New Orleans-style brass band while enjoying a wonderful brunch in the heart of the French Quarter overlooking historic Jackson Square. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com or call 504-934-3463. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking, next door at the W Hotel.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you today. Happy to be here. Happy to have some great guests in the studio. Leora Madden from Pearl Wine Company and Henri Benegener. And I'm still probably just slightly off. I apologize. Thank you. I appreciate that, Henri, and your patience with my very poor French, as I was mentioning during the break. And I'm going to get myself in further trouble here because I am sitting here currently. My lovely wife, Sylvia, is also visiting the studio. I'm talking about my ex-wife who comes from Bordeaux. And her uncle was the wine commissioner of Saint-Emilion for about 27 years or so. But we're going to move on from that. So I'm making excuses for my poor French is really what's happening.
That's okay.
We'll forgive you. Thank you. So we're tasting the wines, and Henri, your winery, Clos de Caveau, is located in Vaquira, in part of Provence, as you said. And we were talking a little bit about the organic stuff prior. You've now poured some lovely wine for us here. Would you please tell us about it?
All my wines are a mixture of Grenache and Syrah.
Okay.
Majority Grenache, minority Syrah. And they're very different from one another. They have a lot of personality, but not because of grape difference or varietal difference, only because of soil types.
So we're,
tonight we have two that are also very different, and they both are majority Grenache, minority Syrah, which are the traditional grapes in the South Rhone area where I come from.
And you do not use Mauvais or Sansot or anything, just strictly Grenache and
Syrah? I like Mauvais. Uh-huh. I'm trying. I tried 20 years ago. I didn't like it where I planted it around the house. And I have a new plot, which is 2-3 years old now, where it's growing, and we will see what happens.
Good luck.
That's exciting.
That is very exciting. Got a little news here for you. Awesome. Great. Awesome. So now, with the vineyards then that you have for the Grenache and the Syrah, how large is your vineyard area?
12 hectares, which are 30 acres.
30 acres.
And we're in the hills, and we're located South Rhone, surrounded on three sides by Gigondas, which is a bigger and a little bit more well-known appellation, and a stone's throw away from Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that you've brought up something that I actually wanted to ask, because whenever you read about Vaquira, they will often refer to it in connection to Gigondas, or I frequently see it referred to as the little brother of Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's sometimes not fair. This is a very distinct region, correct, with its own terroir, and in your situation, even more unique with your terroir. I just wanted to bring that up simply and what maybe get your thoughts on that. It is its own place.
Well, in terms of the three appellations mm-hmm. I mentioned, Châteauneuf-du-Pape and Gigondas and Vaqueras, those three appellations have not come to fruition at the same time. Châteauneuf has maybe 50, 60 years more, have been around for much longer. Mm-hmm. And Gigondas has been around maybe 20 years longer than Vaqueras. Also, Vaqueras is the little brother in terms of size as well. Not only they came along, they were born later, so to speak, but they are smaller than Gigondas, and in terms of geographical surface.
Now, Vaqueras received its appellation in 1990, correct, or around that time. So it is a fair, especially, I think it's 1990. And I think with Châteauneuf-du-Pape, it's maybe the 1930s or 1920s, something like that. But point taken from the little brother standpoint. But I think we're so quick to refer to some place to make an easy association as opposed to allowing a place to be what it is. You don't become an appellation without having a distinct character.
indeed, without having a distinct character. And there's also quite quality control along the way. Like before bottling, I will have to, 2 weeks before bottling, tell the union, the Syndicat Vacaras, that I'm going to bottle my wines. And there's a chance out of two they do a blind tasting. They come and take a sample of the tank before I bottle it, and it'll go in through with a lot of other wines that'll be bottled that week, and it has to go through that test.
Interesting. And so that is, it's a random test.
Yeah.
So you're audited essentially, which is, so
as well as the lab analysis, of course.
Okay. And so for our listeners out there too, because I think it's always fascinating, the variation when we go from appellation to appellation, anywhere really, but in France in particular. In Vacaras, what are some of the requirements? I think what's foreign to a lot of people, Henri, let me specify my question a little further. For example, here in the United States, it's basically the geographic region. There's no constraint on varietal use. There's no constraint on level of alcohol. But of course, that varies throughout France. And in your situation, what are those rules?
Well, in my situation, we have to have low yields. And the grapes, we have to... we have a legal binding to the land. Usually we own the land 90% of the time. Sometimes some people rent their land, which is quite different from the situation here where the winemaker is more center stage because he will buy grapes and somebody else very often will be making the grapes and they will buy. So the winemaker has much more power in a way here, land of freedom, where they'll buy 1 year here or another year there. For example, in the story I was talking about before, I had a visit of a neighbor of that famous Napa wine that did so well at the judgment. The following year, the guy went to buy his grapes, but the producer, the farmer who produced the grapes, had read the paper. So he doubled his price. So the winemaker couldn't buy the same grapes again. And from... The tourist that came to see me last summer was saying, and the wines were never quite the same because the grapes were different.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we're very much in the long term with our land.
And you have, and also by result of that, then there are only certain varietals that you can use.
Grenache and Syrah are the main ones. Mm-hmm. And then we have a whole string of subcategory, minor varietals that we're allowed to use as well, Mourvèdre being one of them.
That would be number three, correct, and where you are, which is the sort of the GSM, as we say here, the traditional Rhone concept, but then Sansot, I think there's 18 or something that are acceptable in Vacaras, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
excellent. And so tell us a little bit more, Henri, about this wine in particular. So primarily Grenache, and if you don't want to give the blend away exactly, feel free to not give the blend away exactly. And I'm getting there. It's a really lovely wine. I mean, Lior, what are some of your thoughts on this?
This wine has struck me from day one, the first time I tasted it, because of its minerality, yet complexity, but the finish is so full. And I can say that to be true for all of his wines. And you know, clean. I feel like clean is a word that's overused, sometimes in our industry with wines, but it's not quite clean. It's you can really taste how fresh and how organic these vines are. There are other producers out there who are doing this now, but not many who have been doing it as long. And you can really taste that difference in the grapes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's, well, we will overuse that term clean, but I think very, very true. The balance, Henri, is remarkable in the wine. I get some nice nose of tobacco, just a touch. And there's a wonderful sort of plum note to it. And then the minerality, as you say, comes through very nicely. Mm-hmm. And the acidity, then there's a beautiful touch of floral and then a very nice acidity to this wine as well. It just goes just evenly, which I think is a wonderful achievement.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Well,
my pleasure.
And as the retailer, may I interject?
Please.
And
absolutely.
Say his prices are incredibly reasonable to go along with all of this. This particular Côte du Rhône that we're drinking now, retails for under $20. And his Vacheron retails for $25, which is just outstanding for the quality.
And we're going to come back to that one here after the break. Folks, come on back here to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. Noah Drinks Edition. We're drinking some Vacheron. Come on back.
Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big-screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon of St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Breakfast is new to the menu at Dickie Brennan's Tableau. Stop by for Tableau's signature Eggs Benedict or order their famous bread pudding Pan Perdue. Tableau now offers brass brunch on Saturdays and Sundays beginning at 10 a.m. Listen to the rhythmic sounds of a New Orleans-style brass band while enjoying a wonderful brunch in the heart of the French Quarter overlooking historic Jackson Square. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com or call 504-934-3463. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Hey, we are drinking some beautiful Vacheron wine with Henri, Bengenier.
That's better.
Better.
He's progressing little by little.
I'm progressing. We're talking a little bit about this, about my French has just gone out the window. I need to come pay you a visit, Henri, and we need to put me in some language courses, I think, is what also needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. And do your show live from Provence?
That would be wonderful. We were talking about this during the break. We're going to go. Leora, you're coming?
I'm coming.
All right. Yep. We're going. Yep. We were talking about looking for volunteers for Harvest. I'm not doing that part. Done that enough, Henri.
I might do a little bit of that.
You can do that? I'll take pictures of you doing that.
Depends on the neck, but okay. Yeah, I might do a little bit of that.
Well, so, y'all, the first wine that we tasted, which is lovely, is the Les Bateliers. And can you tell us what that, it's an interesting name.
Les Bateliers is the word in France to describe the children, the men and the women that used to pull the animals that pull the barges up and down the Rhone and up and down the canals long before the locomotive.
That's and beautiful. And so,
and we had a batelier that worked for us. There was a charming man, an elderly gentleman in the 80s. And as a child, 80 years earlier, he was rented out by his dad from age 8 to 16.
Okay.
He said the work wasn't that bad. What was bad was the sleeping conditions. They slept along the footpath.
Along the banks?
Of the, no, along on the barge.
Oh, okay.
On the footpath along the side of the boat.
Okay. So now
and
on the side.
Sometimes he had a nightmare or agitated sleep and would wake up in the water. So that was no fun.
That sounds like no fun. The wine is a lot more fun. And it's a good story. So we are now tasting the second one, the Fruit Sauvage. Tell us a little bit about this wine, Henri, please.
This is a bit further up the hill. The first one, the Les Bateliers, Côte du Rhône, was in the plain, and this is maybe 100 meters further up the hill around the winery itself. And it's also Grenache and Syrah, but from a much older soil.
So, I'm sorry, you caught me mid-sip. This is lovely. So you have then separate blocks of the Grenache and the Syrah in the different strata.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So, and you said older, older vines?
No, I was talking about the age of the soil.
Older soil.
As
okay.
In 30 million years compared to 5 million years.
I see. Okay. And
In terms of the, we're starting to enter hillside wine category. So as you go up the hill, it gets drier. The vines don't grow so big as in the plain. In the plain, they're much more lush, bigger grapes. And the yields are bigger as well. So as you go up the hill, your yields get smaller, and you can start making what the sommelier will identify as older vine type of wine much faster than in the plain.
You were talking before we came on the air with the show, so it's very interesting because the strata is oriented vertically. So the roots are able to grow to a much larger depth as you go further up the hillside then.
Yeah, I was telling you that this summer we had a bit of drought during the last 5 weeks of the summer, end of August, beginning of September. And some of the vines, particularly in the plain, started showing signs of dryness. The bottom leaves started drying up and so on. And it affects the grape and the maturation, which slows down and everything. But not around the house in these incredible stratas where the roots can go down a good 20 to 25 yards from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting set of growing conditions. And you were talking also before we came on the air about the, well, I think we talked a little bit about this on the air too, but the the drier winds that you get from the continental weather that helps mitigate the humidity then throughout the growing season.
The area, La Plaine du Comte à Venessin, the area around Avignon, Aix, where this Mistral, this famous dry wind from the north comes, is famous for its fruit and veg. Long before the 60s, you know, before the 60s, at a time when everything was organic, all wines were organic, all fruit were organic, because they hadn't invented the pesticides and the chemicals yet.
Exactly.
So long before, this whole area was famous for production of fruit and vegetables.
This is a lovely wine, and Lior, feel free to jump in here too. And I want to reiterate, we were talking about the friendly nature of the price points on the wine.
Yes.
And for the quality, this wine with the Fruit Sauvage, beautifully firm tannin. So I think we start to step into a little bit more of going wonderfully with a, I could do this with a wonderful ribeye, actually, to be honest with you.
Yes. And not only that, but this wine has a quality to it where it really holds up to our cuisine here in New Orleans. And of course, the cuisine in the Rhone. But I think it's a beautiful expression. And when you see some of the maps of his different stratas in the geography of his 12 hectares, which we'll see tonight at the tasting, you really get a visualization of exactly why this wine tastes the way it does, because of, like he said, the age of the soil, the elevation, and you really start to understand why, you know, you would want to separate your property in a way to produce these different personalities.
Absolutely.
Because these are just two of many different personalities from Henri's property.
And one thing I want to highlight, y'all, is that you, Henri, were talking about during the break here about how you carefully choose to harvest when you harvest right before the acidity drops. And as Lior mentioned, with going with food in New Orleans, well, we need a good acid backbone with a lot of the food here, mm-hmm. because of some of the spice and things like that are used. So these the acidity, you don't acidify your wines. The acidity is incredibly integrated into the wine, but it's present. So there is that acid backbone that is really critical, I think, to any wine, but critical to our cuisine here in New Orleans.
I really like being here because you can eat so well.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're very popular. Do you bring your wines around and try and get free food? That's what I would do. Hopefully we've treated you right since you've been here, Henri.
Yes, indeed. I've tasted some really great places.
Excellent. And it really, these wines are fantastic, very food friendly to what we would do here with that acidity. It'll stand up to a little Cajun spice and some things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I even think, especially this one in particular, to me, I mentioned a ribeye because of the firm tannin structure, but also I could do this with actually certain forms of shellfish mm-hmm. that we have here because...
Dropping the temperature of it.
Yeah, serve mm-hmm. it a little chilled, Henri, exactly. Mm-hmm. And well, go ahead, Lior, you're going to
say. I was just going to say, I mean, barbecue shrimp would be
precisely
delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is really good stuff. So let's do this, y'all. Reiterate where, because we're talking about all these lovely wines. This is always the, I think, the difficult part or the mean-spirited part, if you will, about doing radio and drinking wine is that everybody out there listening doesn't get to experience all the things that we are on the palate here. But folks, if you're out there listening, you can experience these things that are on our palates now by going to the tasting this evening.
Yes, 5 to 7 at Pearl Wine Company, 3700 Orleans Avenue in the American Can Building. We do have free parking, but do expect a little bit of a buzz around because we do have the farmer's market going on until 7 p.m.
Oh, you don't mean
as well?
From the wine drinking part?
Yeah, well, that too.
Okay.
Yeah, that too. It's every Thursday from 5 to 7, but we love to highlight exceptional winemakers such as Henri on our Thursday during our Thursday tasting. So we're delighted to have him.
And great. And you'll be there meeting people, talking about the wines, Henri.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Doing a few pictures as well.
Absolutely. We've been doing that too during the break. Henri, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it and sharing
your
wonderful wine.
And once again, it's lovely to be in New Orleans.
Thank you. Well, and come back anytime. Let us
home
know
away from
back.
Home.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Lior, thanks for being here, pal.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Folks, go check out the tasting there. Clos du Caveau wines. Man, these are fantastic, fantastic wines from the Southern Rhone and Vacheron. Wonderful stuff. When we come back after the break, we're going to be joined by, we're going to go from Old World to New World. We're going to be joined by Jeff Rundquist from Plymouth there in the Amador region of California. So come on back.
When I get through walking these blues, when I get back to New Orleans.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Thanks for being here today, listening in, folks. It's the home stretch to the weekend, as it always is on Thursday. Pleased that you're out there listening. If you're hearing the podcast a little later, it's not Thursday. It means that it's Friday or beyond, but that doesn't matter. It's still more or less the weekend. Pleased to be joined by a couple more excellent guests. We're just wall-to-wall guests today, and everybody's shaking hands here, and we're transitioning. But Jeff Rundquist from Jeff Rundquist Wines, out there in California, my homeland. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Jack Jelenko from Partners Wine.
Brian, always great to see you.
Always great to see you. It's been a while, Jack, actually, since I've seen you.
It has indeed. And we don't look any different.
I've gotten a couple more grays and probably a couple more pounds, buddy, but you know. But excellent to see you guys. Thanks for coming in and making some time. Jeff, you're here in town. As you're here often, aren't you?
Not as often as I like to be.
Fair enough.
We've got our trade shows with our local distributor last couple of days, and we'll do a winemaker dinner tonight over at
Two Jacks.
Oh, great. Yep.
And then I'm back on the Silverbird to take care of some young red wines back at the winery.
Oh, great. So this is just one leg trip here out here to New Orleans and back.
That's right.
Excellent. So the winery there, you are located in Plymouth, correct?
Yes, just outside of Plymouth in the Shenandoah Valley in Amador County.
Yep, that place from which I am very familiar. And now with the grapes that you make your wines from, is it a lot of stuff from Amador? So you're in Amador, of course, which you want to be clear about that for folks.
Yes, the winery is located in Amador County, but we've taken a little different approach in that we don't limit ourselves to just the grapes that grow in our region. We'll travel as far south as Paso Robles and as far as east as the Napa Valley, depending on the variety that we're interested in working with and the grower that I have a relationship with. I made wine for 16 years prior to launching my own venture, so I developed a cadre of growers and friends that I could depend upon to provide very high-quality grapes. And so when we looked at doing different varieties, different flavors, different characters, I was able to tap into a network that I already was confident about. So about a third to maybe 50% of the production that we do comes from the Sierra foothills. Of that, vast majority of it's from Amador County. But the winery's located in Amador, but doesn't limit our reach when we look for particular flavors.
It's an interesting study in contrast, just given when we had Henri from Clos de Caveau on from Vacky Ross, and we were talking a little bit about how they go about things, and if they are much more, and as he eloquently put it, really they're tied to the land, and in a wonderful, beautiful way. And then in your situation, which I think is also equally great, is that you're then free to work with, I'm assuming, independent growers that you've developed relationships with, where you can go say, hey, I want to make this grape, and I'm going to go to where I know the terroir is good for that particular varietal, and I know this guy or gal knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
There's that part of it, too, which is always a challenge.
You've hit the nail on the head. A lot of people will ask, how do you decide who to buy the grapes from? And it's really an experience, and I say, well, the grapes don't decide, the wine decides.
Mm-hmm.
We'll test drive grapes. We'll bring in a couple of tons and try them, and if we think there's a future and we think that there's a quality and a distinctiveness to the particular flavors they offer, we'll expand. And usually, concentrating on red wines, we have to make an investment of a couple of years before we start to get some feedback as to whether we're close to what we'd like to bring to market and whether the market will warm to it. But there have been some grapes that we don't pursue in the future, but for the vast majority, because they come highly recommended and they're often from existing growers that are trying something new and different on their own and mm-hmm. want to share it with us, we've been pretty successful with what we bring to market. We're also very lucky in that the vast majority of our wines are sold directly to the consumer, and the consumer gets a chance to taste the wines in the tasting room before they try it. A lot of people walk in, Tannat. What's Tannat? I've never right. heard of Tannat or Tariga or Sejao.
Outside of the national grape of Uruguay.
Exactly. or Charbono or some of the off-color varieties, off-the-beaten track varieties that we produce. Most people won't, in a three-tier market where it's going through a distributor and then to a retailer or a restaurateur before it finally gets to the end user, it usually loses its identity.
Yeah, the story and where you got, and I think that's an important thing to say, Jeff.
Actually. It is, and when you have a captive audience in the tasting room, we can try some very esoteric, very small production, unique wines, and it's not a great risk to us because we don't invest a great deal, but a couple of tons in the beginning, and then if we get feedback from the tasting room that hey, people are really warming up to this, we really like it, then we'll expand it. I mean, one of the varieties that we've found very recently is charming some folks is Charbono.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's an and where are you getting those grapes? Are you guys doing those in Amador or
we're doing them in the Sierra foothills? We have three okay. different sources: two in Amador and one in El Dorado County.
Okay, great. And as for the listeners out there too, I think when we describe the Sierra foothills, a lot of people associate it, of course, with Zinfandel.
Right.
And it is a warmer and in the growing season tends to be a drier.
Yes.
Situation than mm-hmm. most places. So achieving ripening for red grapes is usually not a problem.
Not a problem.
But with some of the other stuff then that you're talking about, well, just to be curious, where is the Tannat coming from? Because that is an interesting
Well, the Tannat is coming from a gentleman, Ron Silva, out of Galt in the northern, it's the Alta Mesa district of the Lodi Appalachian, just south of Sacramento. And Ron is Portuguese of descent
mm-hmm.
and has concentrated on Iberian Peninsula varieties. And while it's on perhaps what most people would consider the other side of the Pyrenees, but the origins of Tannat are such that he's embraced it and does a very nice job with
it. That sounds like the connection to the Tariga then that you mentioned
it
as
is.
Well. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm half Portuguese from the Bay Area, so I'm kind of tied into that myself a little bit. Well, and we're talking a little bit too, Jeff, about people having a wonderful experience being able to try the wines in the tasting room. But you don't have to. You can be here in New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
And that's where our good pal Jack over there comes in.
That's right.
Yeah. So yep. Jack makes sure that you can get the wines here. You don't have to take a trip all the way out to California to taste the wines.
Exactly. I like to have people be able to try them here or in Denver or in Portland or in Boston or in Miami or, yeah.
This has turned into a Johnny Cash song, but, man.
But, you know, Jeff said something interesting that I do want to point out, that because of that relationship with growers, all of his varietal wines are single vineyard, grower identified. And in fact, the grower's name is the first thing on the label.
Very cool.
Above the winemaker's name. And he really, it's a partnership. I mean, it's really showing what these guys can do.
Thank you for bringing that up, Jack, because that's really important. We're talking about, as I mentioned earlier, about knowing what he or she is good at doing. And I think we find that in many cases, people, especially in the new world, we overweigh the value of the term estate. And look, I mean, sort of cultivating and curating yourself all the way through, there's something to be said for that, don't get me wrong. But if you're trying to bring in a variety, you're not going to grow a really good Chardonnay in the Sierra foothills. Let's just put it that way, right? I mean, maybe there's some exceptions, but by and large.
Correct.
Yeah. So we're, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody that's doing anything in particular, but it's a warmer climate.
Yes.
So if finding farmers let the farmer do their job, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's quite often that people will ask, how do I decide where to buy the grapes and from whom? And it's usually a track record. And I'll explain that, you know, I've historically made wine from these grapes, and so I will approach a particular grower that I've had success with, and then we'll move on from there in terms of different varieties and different flavors. But then they'll also say, well, you at least tell the grower how to grow the grapes. No. That's their contribution. That's the reason why their name is on the label. Well, what about picking? You tell them when to pick, don't you? I go, and that's one of the things I have about some of I don't have the arrogance to walk into a grower's vineyard and say when the grapes are at their optimum. That's for him to choose.
That's for him to choose. So you talk about what you're trying to accomplish with the program,
mm-hmm.
and then we go from there.
Exactly.
You guys, we're going to take a quick break and come back with a little bit more. And then can we taste some wine when we come back?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Folks, coming back here to the NOLA Drinks edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. We're going to be back with hour number two. We're going to taste some wines. We're here with Jeff Rundquist and Jack Jelenko. Thanks for being here, guys. Appreciate it. Come on back.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey.
McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Edition here of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. Happy to be here with you. Happy to be here with more wine, friends. It's that kind of, it's a wine-soaked day. My favorite kind of Thursday. Here with Jeff Rundquist from Rundquist Wines and Jack Jelenko from Partners Wines. Thanks for being here, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So, Jeff, you poured for us right as we went into the break, the Petit Verdot. And I'm noticing that this is so, we're talking about how we, before the break, Jack, you mentioned and what you guys do there, Jeff, listing the grower right up there first and foremost. So I'm seeing Damer Ranch. Did I say that right?
We pronounce it Damer.
Damer. Okay. Damer. Yeah. Okay. We've anglified that, right? Damer Ranch in, from Stanislaus County.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Stanislaus County. A little bit of background. My first response to experience with Petit Verdot was in 1995. And it was during a trip to Bordeaux with an employer who was making the wines for Jerry Lohr at the time. And the French vintners that we visited all waxed poetic about this variety, Petit Verdot. And I had flown over there with Robert Parker's book on my lap, and I knew that very little Petit Verdot is grown in Bordeaux, and that very rarely, if ever, do you get a double-digit percentage in a Bordeaux blend.
Right.
And my question was, well, if you guys all think so great of this variety, why is it that you don't plant more of it? And the French vintner we were with motioned me over to the window and tapped on the glass. And outside it was raining cats and dogs. They were into the Sauvignon Blanc harvest. They were 2 weeks away from harvesting red grapes. And he says, we can't ripen it. Mm-hmm. So of the major Bordeaux varieties, it's the last to ripen. And that struck me on the way home on the plane that, at the time, in the mid-90s, the complaint and the issue with California wines was too much flavor, too much color, too much alcohol, too much. It doesn't blend, it doesn't match well with food. It's overwhelming. And I thought, well, here's a variety that the French think very highly of, and it needs what apparently we have in California with abundant sunshine and plenty of heat. And that's what we have in Stanislaus County.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to us in terms of directing the flavors and the orientation of Petit Verdot to black currants and the dark blue-black fruits rather than the tobacco leaf, olive, herbal notes of Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. So that's really what drew me to Petit Sirah. And this particular vineyard is... has a wonderful reputation within the vintners of the Northern Interior of doing an outstanding job with red wines. It also grows Ruby Cabernet and Cabernet Sauvignon.
Ah, interesting.
Very well.
This is very nice. And it's always nice to taste a single, and as you've noted, California can get away with this. You can do single varietal stuff that we would typically associate with being a blending wine from the old world. This is a wonderful expression, bright red fruit, really fantastic. What's the price point on this guy, Jack?
It's about $24-$25.
Yeah, so very...
It's reasonable.
Very, very reasonable. Nice tannic structure on this. Good steak wine. I keep saying that today, but good steak wine.
Well, you know, Brian, it's a lot of fun because a lot of people have never tasted 100% Petit Verdot.
Exactly.
And so it's an open canvas. It's a completely blank canvas for us to show people, for Jeff to show people what Petit Verdot can be if it's grown properly and made properly.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's a great point, Jack. Where people have tasted it and don't know is that it's often used as a 5% bump in wine to give some big, bolder fruit, add some tannins, to other wines like Cabernet Sauvignon, things like that. This is where we get to actually see the varietal shine on its own. Well, let's do this, you guys. Because we have about 4 or 5 minutes left. Let's taste the next wine. Talk about that. What do we got now, Jeff?
We've got our biggest selling wine, our biggest selling varietal wine, which is Petit Sirah. And this is now coming from the Clarksburg Appellation, which is south of Sacramento on the Sacramento River. It's a region that I've gravitated towards because in the realm of Petit Sirah,
so many of the Appalachians that are growing Petite Sirah end up with a wine that really merits some time in the cellar. It's something that has a lot of extract, a lot of tannin, and we often have guests at the winery. When it comes time to tasting Petite Sirah, I say, oh, no, I'm familiar with Petite Sirah. I'll pass. It's much too dry a wine. And, you know, from a drinks perspective, we're all thinking, well, dry, yeah, there's no sugar in it. But they're talking about the tactile sensation of the wine in their mouth. It shuts down the salivary glands and your mouth ends up being very astringent and very dry. And so I've been blessed that our staff is very good at cajoling people into trying it and saying, well, you really need to try this because not all Petite Sirahs are like this. And it's nice to watch because a light bulb goes on when they have a chance to taste it, and they'll go, wow, I never knew a Petite Sirah could taste like this. And a lot of it has to do with where the grapes are grown. But we think we've been able to, as I say, provide all the assets and none of the liabilities. You get the big, rich flavors, the dark fruits, the big, creamy texture. But on the finish, the wine remains succulent and juicy. From a winemaking technical perspective, we're able to add we're able to retain a little bit more acidity to the wine, which helps hold the fruit character through time in the bottle, and also gives it some length in terms of how long it can age.
That's a really good point, Jeff, on Petite Sirah, which is actually one of my favorite varietals, having started out working in the wine industry in Livermore, actually.
Right.
And where, you know, it was originally brought to the country, and we'll tell that story some other time. But I think people tend to mishandle this grape so often in that because it is a big grape like we're talking about, but people push that stick way too far. I think sometimes they put too much oak, they actually get too much ripening on the wine, and where they give short shrift where yours is not, I think the acidity component is actually ignored. And so we basically just get a fruit bomb, and then there's no finish to the wine. And that's, you've achieved something quite different here with that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad you recognize that and appreciate it. Unfortunately for us, some of the techniques that we use in producing this wine don't scale up. All of the wines that we produce are fermented in small bins. And the extraction is aimed towards getting the flavor and the color out of the skins and being very gentle and very soft with the seeds, and never pumping the wine, and while it still contains the skins and the pulp and the seeds, is a mantra for us. We're able to actually physically homogenize the fermentation three times a day with paddles, and it's all done by hand. And the result is that we get the flavor and the color and the extract from the skins, but leave the harsh tannins from the seeds behind. And it's worked well for us. And like I said, it's our biggest seller.
Mm-hmm. Excellent job on this grape. I'm actually pretty picky about it. Jack knows that. Well, and this is really nice. And Clarksburg is such an interesting place, too, because it's a very up-and-coming region, I think. In California. I mean, we kind of associate, I always associate with UC Davis being out in the middle of nowhere, kind of right around that neck of the woods.
Same county, Yolo County.
Oh, yeah, Yolo County. And it's a great place for Petite Sirah because you have the heat to achieve the ripening. There's a little bit of cooling that kind of
right. You're right there at the entrance to the delta. Yep. And so the influence of the San Francisco Bay is there. And it's very rare that a heat spell in the delta lasts more than a couple of days.
Exactly.
The fog being drawn in through the Golden Gate and the Carquinez Straits helps limit the length of time that we have outrageously warm days in the delta. And beautiful farmland, used to be pears, still is, sugar beets, but now with the continued growth of the California wine industry, there's been a lot of folks planting grapes in the Delta. Petite Sirah and Chenin Blanc are probably the two earliest varieties, but there's been a lot of experimentation with Iberian Peninsula varieties, Albariño,
and Vermentino and a number of other varieties. And so it's a region that is drawn quite a few other vintners to. And I think we're going to hear more and more about Clarksburg in the future.
Absolutely. Jack, do me a favor. Yeah, you tell people where we can find the wines real quick in the last minute or so that we got before the break. Or
you can find the wines at every fine wine retailer here in town.
Well done.
Bennett the Wine Cellar, Leora. I mean, you know, they really are nicely available. Not in the big membership clubs, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Not unfortunately. But I did want to mention, if I could
please.
Take another 10 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, take your time.
There's a handful of seats remaining this evening. We're doing the winemaker dinner at Two Jacks. And if anybody hasn't been to Two Jacks recently with Guy Sockrider as the head chef up there and upstairs, it's a fantastic meal, fantastic dinner. And we've got just about a full house, but there are a handful. If you want to come and meet Jeff Rundquist and taste six of his beautiful wines, plus a couple of champagnes.
Very nice.
It's well worth the evening.
So, of course, if you haven't been to Two Jags, you've missed your decade-long chance to go to the second oldest restaurant in New Orleans, of course. And do they just call the restaurant for reservations?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It starts at 7 o'clock this evening.
Okay.
So I would even say call them or just walk on in.
Walk on in.
Sit right down.
Right, absolutely. Right there on Decatur and Dumaine, more or less. Great restaurant. That dinner is going to be fantastic, you guys.
I think it's going to be terrific.
Yeah, wonderful. Jeff, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Jack, always a pleasure to see you, my
friend.
Always,
Brian.
Thank you guys for coming. Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, okay. Let us know next time you're in town.
I will do so.
All right, friends. Jeff Rundquist from Rundquist Wines, thank you very much. Jack Jelenko from Partners Wine, thanks, guys, for being here. Come on back after the break. We're going to be joined by Liam Deegan from Barrel Proof and Darren Elisto from Sylvain.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Well, here we go. Anthony, am I on? We're on the air. Here we go. We're doing a radio show. Hey, dude, you're on it. I'm not. Anthony's working the board as he always is. I'm just falling down here as the host here on the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz, happy to be here with you. Of course, Anthony's working the board like he's supposed to. He's kind of wincing at me right now because, like, I mean, of course he's over there working the board like he's supposed to. I'm just kind of falling down. Yes, and help yourself, Darren, to the water. Absolutely. I'm pleased to be joined by my good friends, Darren Elisto from Sylvain and Liam Deegan from Barrel Proof. Welcome, boys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like your haircut.
Thank you. As we were joking the other day, when you said that to me, I walked into the barber and I said, give me an Alisto. Which, of course, I didn't want to go, as in this will be an inside joke, but I did not want to go Southern German wine hero and say, give me an Estelle.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, we don't want to do that.
Don't want to go there.
Of course, referring to I'll just throw him under the bus, our good friend Isaiah Estelle there, who is the beverage director at Cavan. I don't have his selection of hats, nor do I really have the scalp to wear that haircut.
No, that's true.
Very true. So thanks for being here, you guys. Yep. How you doing?
Psyched to be here. Beautiful weather, beautiful day.
Yeah. We're coming into the fall. Cold front coming in.
Is it?
I think.
I keep waiting for it to get cold.
It's supposedly this evening. I'm looking for, you know, there was that little time in there about 2 weeks ago when you could sleep with your windows open and it was really nice, and then it went right back to not.
Yeah, that's terrible.
But that's okay. So, hey, we're coming into the fall here. But before we get there, let's do this. This is one of the fun things that we like to do. And I didn't get a chance to mention this earlier. You can check out our website, which is noladrinks.com, or check us out on social media. It's all under Nola Drinks. And one of the things that we actually do on Instagram, primarily, and Twitter to a certain degree, is we use the hashtag hashtag cocktail hero. And this was a term that was coined some time ago by you, Mr. Darren Elisto. And actually, that was the last time you two collectively were on the show together.
Oh, yeah.
This was a coined term where we were talking about this, and we were talking about during Tales of the Cocktail, if I'm starting to recall all this. And we were talking about somebody walking into the bar, and maybe the first thing they talk about is they're asking about your ice program or reaching over the bar and stirring the drink for you, something along these lines. And you mentioned something about someone being a cocktail hero and coming in and ordering something overly complex or with advanced garnish,
sure,
or something like that. And we were laughing about it, and we went to the break, and I thought this was the coined term that I was not aware of. And then I looked at Liam here, and I said, Liam, a cocktail hero. And he said, I've never heard that before. So, Darren, you get authorship credit on that.
Thank you.
Cocktail hero.
It just came to me that day sitting right here. I don't know what happened.
It was beautiful. And now it's taken on a life of its own.
I know. It's all over. It's hashtags, and it's all over the material. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you. And t-shirts are coming. We've had some.
Are they?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And we've had some funny memes where there's some funny pictures of you. And folks, if you go to our Facebook page and check out the current video, I'll show this to you guys during the break. Mm. There is a wonderful reference to Cocktail Hero right over the perfect person's little video snippet. I'll show you guys that during the break. Folks, go to the Nola Drinks Facebook page. But let's talk about this Cocktail Hero moments lately.
Well, I'll go first. And then you just mentioned extreme or advanced garnishing on the cocktails.
Yes.
This happened a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't a guest at the bar. It was from a table. So a server, you know, someone ordered a Sazerac.
Mm-hmm.
Typical, you know, in Sylvain, we make thousands of them. Official cocktail of New Orleans. And so the drink went out. Server came back 2 minutes later and said, the young man needs an extra lemon twist. There wasn't enough lemon zest,
lemon oil
on the cocktail. So he needed not an advanced garnish, just an extra one, because it wasn't quite balanced enough for him.
Ah.
That's the first time that's ever happened.
That's interesting.
That's a great one.
You ever get that?
Well, my favorite one is from back in the Sylvain days, where I was just telling Darren about this, where a guy asked for an additional orange peel to flame over his drink himself. He had his own lighter and matches or whatever. And
what did he order?
I think it was like just a Negroni or something, and he felt it needed some extra pizzazz.
Uh-huh.
So there's some tableside flambeing
that
of his drink.
That's the first time you... Go ahead, Liam.
So same kind of deal here, where he asked for like an additional peel, and then server brought it over, and he pulled out some sort of like either a lighter or matches, and did a little show for everyone at his table.
So it becomes his own little self-contained tiki show.
Exactly, yeah.
That is serious cocktail hero.
Lots of
right
excitement.
There. Yeah, lots of excitement. I'm sure that there's probably some rules violation in there, too, as far as OSHA goes or something along those lines, allowing customers to wield a lighter and burn fruit at the table. That's very interesting. All right, great. So there are two quality cocktail hero ones. One that was shared with me recently was, and actually this wasn't all that recently, but over there at Sylvain, where somebody came in and the first thing that they asked about, which I just referenced, they mentioned, you know, very first question is, tell me about your ice program.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important for people. In all seriousness.
And it is.
It is, actually. That is one of the things that is kind of important. You know, you know, there's all those ice machines out there that are specifically designed to water down drinks really fast. And that's kind of been what people use. And now basically, you know, every cocktail bar that's trying, you know, that does a decent thing, we all use, you know, the cold draft machine or a variation on it, which are better, you know, they're colder and they dilute the drink less. It's a better, that isn't a legitimate thing, but I mean, to say it out loud, to ask about it and say it out loud is.
And kind of is the first thing.
I mean,
that's a little bit of a stretch, huh?
I mean, you should assume that walking into a cocktail bar that they're not using terrible ice.
Yes. Right. It doesn't smell like soiled fish.
Right.
Yeah, great. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition, talking with Darren Alisto from Sylvain, Liam Deegan from Barrel Proof. We'll get into something perhaps a little more serious, perhaps not. Come on back.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drinks edition here of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Happy to be here with you. Friends, tomorrow is the Boudin Bourbon and Beer event benefiting the Emeril Lagasse Foundation over there at Champion Square. I believe it's $99 a person, plus if you buy online, a little bit of a surcharge. Turns out to be south of $120 a person. All kinds of good food, live music, wonderful stuff, and it's for a good cause. The Lagasse Foundation there benefits youth, supports youth chefs, all kinds of other great stuff. They raised a good amount of money in 2015, but they need your support this time around here in 2016. If you go to BoudinBourbonAndBeer.com, you can get on board, buy tickets. There's still tickets available. The event often does sell out. Get on board. Check it out. BoudinBourbonAndBeer.com. Pleased to be joined here by my friends Darren Elisto from Sylvain, who is helping himself to my water. Please, we're friends.
Yep.
And Liam Deegan of Barrel Proof, who just brought a bottle of Calvados, man. Who needs water?
Yeah, there's a little bit of water in it.
There is a little bit of water in it. Well, this is a great fall beverage here, Liam. And but I'll tell people what Calvados is if they don't really know already.
So it's an apple brandy. Sometimes a little bit of pear in it from France. I believe northwest
yep,
region.
Typically, yep.
I don't know. It's usually what I think of in the fall. I usually drink a lot of whiskey, but then it's apple brandy is a nice little transitional drink into the winter.
So you start out in the summer with whiskey and then move into the fall with Calvados. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and then more whiskey usually after that. But
right. Well, basically you're just trying to take like an intervallic break from whiskey to try something else.
Yeah, got to throw in some fruits and vegetables.
When you're over there, absolutely, you got to keep the diet balanced.
Yeah.
Well done. Very nice. And you're over there at Barrel Proof, which is in the lower Garden District, as we like to say on magazine.
Yep.
Yeah. And you guys have a lot of whiskey.
Yeah, a lot of whiskey, but we have a small little brandy collection that I like to break into every now and then.
Including Calvados as well?
Yeah, occasionally.
Okay.
But yeah, a little bit of Pisco, mostly cognac.
Yeah, all right. Awesome. And so we were talking a little bit during the break. So we did a little bit of our – does anybody else have a cocktail hero story that we need to cover? Has there been anything else recently? I depend on you guys too, other than what I observe in the bar or how I may occasionally behave in the bar. I try not to be a hero.
Never. You've never been a cocktail hero in there.
No, thank you. No, I don't come in and ask for a screaming Viking and then ask if I want my cucumber bruised or unbruised.
No, never heard it.
No, never do that. No. But are there any other cocktail hero stories that we need to cover?
Maybe later. We'll save them up because they don't happen all the time. You know, they're few and far between, thankfully. So we should probably save them up for future broadcast.
Absolutely. And I would encourage people that if you do have a – I think you got – listeners out there got the flavor of what we're talking about with cocktail hero. Feel free. You can give us a call, 504-556-9696. Feel free to do that. Or, use the hashtag on Instagram or Twitter – cocktail hero, because I actually pay attention to that, and I've seen some pretty good stories. And I will share this one too. There was one, and I'm forgetting, it was at a pub, a bar and pub, I guess same thing more or less, in London, and their sign outside was "Be a cocktail hero."
Really?
Yes. And I kind of pointed in their direction that actually, no, you really don't want to be one. But they did use the hashtag, although somewhat inappropriately. They were sort of encouraging from the other side of the aisle, which I like to discourage.
You saw that online, or you were in London?
No, online. They actually used the hashtag cocktail hero.
Wow. So you're
taking the world by storm.
Taking the world by – dude,
there's two parties. We're all
divided. Yeah. If you actually go search for the hashtag cocktail hero, Liam, on Instagram or Twitter, it'll mostly be the NOLA drink stuff and then the occasional
– And then a bunch of guys in London.
And a bunch of guys in London.
It's like a battle here. You got to load up on the proper side here.
Exactly. Those limeys, they are a bunch of cocktail heroes over there. So, hey, so we're talking a little bit about fall beverages, and we're enjoying this nice Calvados, Liam, that you brought in. And Darren, you were talking about a fun event that comes up traditionally here right around Thanksgiving Day. If I'm not mistaken, races.
Right around there. Are we talking about the races?
Was that what we were going to do?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Liam was probably talk, well, go ahead, Liam. You're talking about Calvados and flasks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so this bottle is one of the things I usually bring in my flask to the races. I think everyone who goes to the races on Thanksgiving Day, it's a lot of families, but then there's also a large amount of people that go who are in the service industry who are just kind of hanging out, boozing, kind of watching the races, kind of just drinking. I think everyone usually brings their own flask instead of buying beers for $8.
This is no secret. I'm not encouraging this behavior, but this is no secret. And you also refer to it as a hipster?
It's a bit of a fashion show, a bit of a scene, you know?
Yes.
There's some steampunk activity.
Hats, beards.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Dress up kind of, you know, I know a lot of the girls wear very, you know, they spend days and weeks making very fancy hats for it. There's a lot of suspenders, you know, people kind of go to the extreme with the fashion. It's kind of cool. It's kind of fun.
Kind of like the Kentucky Derby thing, but we do it here in New Orleans at the racetrack. Yeah.
A little more beige.
A little more beige. So it's fall. It is fall, right? And a little less mint julep, a little more Calvados than your smuggled flask.
A little more crusty than Kentucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, so everyone brings a flask, I think, and then people just have different things. It's kind of fun to... I've a friend who always makes a punch every year with Irish whiskey that's really delicious. I usually bring like some sort of brandy, usually Calvados or something, and people just kind of trade around fast and see what everyone's drinking that day.
Yeah, that sounds like good fun. Now, I'm not advocating any of this illegal behavior, but it sounds like fun.
Allegedly,
exactly. And you're still betting on the horses, right? Or are people not betting on the horses?
I think some people are. I always lose, so.
Well, that's half the fun, right? You just go put $2 down on the long shot, and it doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. So I think, we've covered the horse races. That's done pretty well. So let's talk a little bit about fall drinks, you guys, as we sort of shift to fall. You guys over there at Sylvain, Darren, changed the cocktail menu up a little bit recently, right?
Yeah, we did a big change about, 3-4 months ago in the middle of the summer. And then now, as the weather is supposed to be changing, we kind of changed we changed to more fall, winter kind of drinks, just a handful of them, just to get the summery drinks off. But the weather's still holding, so we'll see. But we made a couple changes. We have some darker spirit cocktails. We have a bourbon. We got rid of a gin drink, put a cognac drink on there, added a bourbon drink. You know, just kind of more, you know, cold weather flavors and things.
Yeah, and you know, that brings up something interesting to me. So, how much psychologically does that really play in with when people come in and order a drink? Does it really make a huge difference?
It does. You can't believe it. Like, you know, we just put this bourbon cocktail on the menu probably 2 weeks ago, and you know, people just, I don't know what it is, even though it's not cold outside, mm-hmm. people, you know what time of year it is, all these events are going on. I think psychologically, whether the weather is cooperating or not, people think I should be drinking bourbon right now, I should be drinking rye, I should be drinking cognac, and they do. It's a bizarre thing. I think it is completely, totally psychological.
Yeah, and we're dialed into the seasons and the want of the seasons. I think it's always very interesting here in New Orleans. One of my favorite things to watch here in our town is that there is that little hint of cold weather, and then you'll, you know, say come into the quarter in the morning, and it's still going to be 80 degrees as a high during the day, but in the morning people have like their wool jackets and their scarves on. So there's the real desire, please be cold, please be cold.
Well, you noticed last night in the World Series game, typically – you know, you watch the World Game 7 of World Series, it'd be frigid. You know, the guys would be out there in long sleeves and be cold. And it was balmy. Everyone was in, like, you know, short sleeves. It's warm everywhere. You know what I mean? We're not getting the fall like we typically do anywhere.
Anywhere. Absolutely. And, yeah, well, and climate change, of course. You know, here in New Orleans, we also are, you know, we get a pretty short spring. We get a pretty short fall where the weather is cooperative, being not humid and not cold. Relative to our perspective of what cold is. But hey, you know, so this is the time when we move into these fall drinks. And Liam, from your end of things, then what are you guys seeing happen over at Barrel Proof? Have we started to see people? Old fashions are year round.
Yeah, people drink those kind of year round. But I mean, for me, it's kind of tough to pull the trigger on fall cocktails at the same time that a lot of people do in the year, because New Orleans doesn't really have four seasons. I mean, to me, it's like it's either hot or cold, and cold. Last year, we didn't really make a cold weather menu switch until it was like after New Year's, I think. It would be cold maybe, and then it got warm again. So it's hard to put like those cold weather cocktails on or push them when people are like out in shorts and drinking outside when they want like margaritas or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, people still drink, you know, all sorts of whiskey. Definitely not as much scotch when it's still warm out, but people, old fashions are year round. A lot of bourbon just on the rocks, like the nicer stuff, is always good to drink.
So then when it is warmer, then your old fashions, of course, obviously were served on the rocks. Mm-hmm. So as we get into the colder weather, then you're seeing people are going to order stuff, just a pour of scotch neat.
Yeah, I mean, we also do a fair amount of like toddies with whiskey. That's usually when it gets like actually cold. But for the most part, you know, whiskey's a year-round thing.
Yeah, and a lot of our neighbors here in the country, climate change notwithstanding, you know, people have been into the, you know, toddy season for a while. And it's like, it's very desirable. I know one of the things that I like to do at home is mulled wine. I've been a big fan of, you know, mulled spice wine for a long time. And, you know, just make it yourself and or get it when you're out and about. And it's like, man, that window that we get here in New Orleans to actually do that is, you got to get all those hot beverages in about a 3 or 4 week span.
Right.
No, it's true. And, you know, the bummer of it is, well, not bummer of it, but like, I love toddies. I think they're like, you know, to walk in from when it's like freezing cold outside and sit down with a really hot liquor drink is like one of the best things.
Yeah.
But I don't think it ever gets cold enough to appreciate it in New Orleans. It's got to be like below 30. It's got to be like in the 20s or teens. Like, you got to be legitimately cold to really like enjoy that beverage the way it's supposed to. You know, what it's like in New Orleans is like 40 degrees outside to have a hot toddy. It's like,
Yeah, for some people that's cold, you know, and I mean, you know, it depends on where you're from. And, you know, like hot buttered rum's another one, right? Which is,
you can always just crank your AC in your house and just pretend like it's cold out.
Yeah, you can all sit under the fan. Yeah. That works great. But you guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a little break here on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. We're going to come back in a, who knows, wax philosophical about more stuff coming into the fall. Folks, come on back.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Breakfast is new to the menu at Dickie Brennan's Tableau. Stop by for Tableau's signature Eggs Benedict or order their famous bread pudding Pan Perdue. Tableau now offers brass brunch on Saturdays and Sundays beginning at 10 a.m. Listen to the rhythmic sounds of a New Orleans-style brass band while enjoying a wonderful brunch in the heart of the French Quarter overlooking historic Jackson Square. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com or call 504-934-3463. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz, happy to be here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. It's been a fun show. Wall-to-wall guests, as we talked about. Go check out Jazz in the Park over there at Armstrong Park with Shannon Powell and Dwayne Doopsy. And it's Doopsy, by the way, not Dopsy, as I've heard people say recently, Doopsy and the Zydeco Hellraisers. And pleased to be joined by a couple. Well, I don't want to say Hellraisers or Cocktail Heroes, but Darren Elisto from Sylvain, as well as Liam Deegan from Barrel Proof. And we were chatting a little bit during the break because you can tell this is an incredibly scripted show about what we do here on the NOLA Drinks edition of the show, especially when you guys come on. So we did our Cocktail Hero stuff and talk a little bit about Calvados, a little bit about fall drinks and changing the menu. One of the other things, friends, that goes on every fall is we get into that the Beaujolais Nouveau thing. And so Beaujolais Nouveau comes out, which is, of course, a really incredibly young wine from this year. Hmm. And there is an event coming up that I'm sure Tim will talk about tomorrow where that's going to be here in town, where you can go try the 2016 Beaujolais Nouveau, you know, brand spanking new stuff, which is, of course, the Gamay Noir grape. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I think lots of times here people associate Beaujolais with the Nouveau thing and a very green young wine, which is it's fun and interesting thing. But that's not really what we're talking about here in the grand scheme of things as far as Beaujolais or the Gamay grape in particular.
Yeah, not for what we would try to do at Sylvain, for example. At the moment we don't, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But I like to have real Beaujolais on the menu by the glass, because it's delicious wine, it's great food wine, it's kind of a traditional Parisian and Lyonnaise like bistro bouchon kind of wine. And I think what's happened is with the Beaujolais Nouveau is most people in America associate Beaujolais specifically with that very young, easy
first
to drink,
taste of the
almost white wine, no tannin kind of wine. And it's kind of strange because, they sell a massive amount of that every year, and they've really they've been promoting it since like the 50s as a way to generate a lot of money for Beaujolais. They've kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit with it, because that's what everybody recognizes when they hear Beaujolais. But there are amazing wines, really inexpensive wines that come out of Beaujolais that are terrific, that have nothing to do with that are aged for an extra year or more and aren't released until the next year and things. So, they have all those the third Thursday in November, I think they officially come
something
out.
Like that,
and
yeah.
Everybody gets excited about it, and it's right before Thanksgiving, and everyone, they have these festivals and everything. It's kind of cool and it's kind of fun to get into. But what we're doing at Sylvain for the month of November is we're going to do off menu by the glass a real Beaujolais. Like this week we've got a Cru Beaujolais, which is the highest level that they do. It's from the village of Chirouble. We're gonna do that by the glass for $14 this week, and throughout November I'm just gonna change it up every week and do a different Beaujolais.
Oh, all the way through.
Yeah, all the way through November.
That's interesting. And so, and as I mentioned, so we're talking about Beaujolais, then we're talking about the Gamay Noir grape, and this is a really incredibly food friendly grape. This is a good it's a good Thanksgiving wine.
Yeah, it's great. I always love drinking around this time of year. My question is to Darren or to you, Brian. It seems like it's becoming more popular. The Beaujolais Nouveau, the whole stigma around it seems to be dropping a little bit, and people seem to be getting into Cru Beaujolais. Is it getting harder, a little harder to get, or more expensive? Because I've seen some Cru Beaujolais that seems a little higher in price.
I think what happened within the wine community, within the Somme community specifically, is that there's great value in Cru Beaujolais. It's one of those, you can get amazing wines that are, that are complex. They're fruity. They have good minerality. They've got good body, good structure. They're great wines that are that traditionally have been inexpensive, because I think people have associated them with the lesser Beaujolais Nouveau.
They couldn't command the price point.
Well, it seemed like one of those like darling wine categories, like Sherry or Riesling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's become exactly that. Yeah. So you can still get a great value wine. They're a little bit more expensive than they used to be. The challenge in a restaurant or in a retail situation is trying to show a consumer that Beaujolais Nouveau and Cru Beaujolais or Beaujolais Village are completely different wines entirely, and that the difference in price point is an accurate reflection of the quality level.
So will you present it as like just Gamay and then Chirouble, or will you actually put good Cru Beaujolais on it?
Yeah, we're not going to write on the menu. We're just going to hand sell it to people. It will be it's a challenge to do that, but hopefully what we'll try to do is convince people that this is a really great wine at a interesting price, and like we were saying earlier, great food wine, pairs with almost everything.
It really does. It's incredibly versatile. I think when you're talking about, you can drink it with turkey if you're going to put it on the Thanksgiving table. If you're, it's one of those wines that I'll always recommend to somebody I don't drink white wine, but I'm having seafood for dinner. They're sort of like Pinot Noir in that regard, and that you can go that way. There's always typically a nice pepper, like light white pepper note on the wine, which that's actually goes just fine with barbecue as well, as long as you don't overdo it with too much sweetness or too much spice.
I read some sommeliers from somewhere has a theory about, if you take New World wine drinkers who are used to very fruity, fruit-forward wines, Beaujolais is a good bridge or transition to Old World wines, which are typically more mineral, because Beaujolais are typically fruity and easy drinking, but they do have that underlying level of minerality. So it's a really good introduction for New World. Beaujolais, Cru Beaujolais or Beaujolais Village are very good, bridges for New World wine drinkers to start drinking Old World wine. That's what I read some guy who said that one time. Makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think, sometimes when you're trying to do, somebody comes in and they say that this is what I drink or this is what I don't like. And what I always tell people is it's 1 degree of separation. So it's 1 degree of separation from a flavor profile or a style. And it's also 1 degree of separation from a price point. Mm. And so, you know, you're not going to get somebody that normally, you know, sticks to the $15 bottle to all of a sudden go buy Screaming Eagle. That's not going to happen. Right. That calls into some other like wine hero question stuff. But, migrating somebody over here, try something new. And I think that's what you guys also do in both your establishments when it comes to not only wine, but even spirits. I sit, as you know, you guys know, this is almost a joke. I sit at both your bars often, and people will come in and say, I want, you know, something, something in soda. And it's like, I don't carry that one, but let me turn you on to this.
Right. I think the whole, not necessarily challenge, but just the job of a bartender or server or whatnot is to kind of give this person a new experience if they want that. Like if you don't carry like the thing that the person drinks every day, you can introduce them to something new and cool and also value oriented. I think that's especially what I think Barrowproof and Sylvain does, and what I've learned working at these places is that it's really cool to introduce people to something that isn't really expensive but is really good. That's when people get, I think, most excited about
right
their experience, is when they find something they've never heard of but it's like really awesome, and then they're not spending like their whole paycheck.
So they've stepped into that world and they're going to stay in that world.
Yeah, which is really and then that opens up, you know, then they'll get a little more adventurous, and you know, they're not worried about spending as much money because they think they know they can find all these other things out there that aren't going to break their wallet,
and they're accessible.
But they're still going to find new cool things.
Well, you guys do me a favor. We got about a minute or so left here. Darren, tell people where they can find Sylvain.
We're at 625 Charter Street in the French Quarter. That's like a half a block on the, well, I guess from that direction, it's the downtown side of Jackson Square. We will be open this Thanksgiving Day, 5 o'clock for the bar, 5:30 for dinner. So, you know, if you're dying to get out of the house and you gotta go have a drink,
awesome. Come to Sylvain. Liam,
Barrowproof, 1201 Magazine, the Lower Garden District, and we will be at the racetrack on Thanksgiving.
Awesome. You guys, thanks for being here very much. By the way, real quick, one other cocktail hero thing that I heard. Somebody was sitting in Sylvain and they were talking about the Vue Carré cocktail. That does not mean view from the square.
Does not mean view from the square.
Folks, thanks for tuning in here to the Noel Drinks Show. Noel Drinks edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. Y'all have a great weekend. Tim will be back in his usual time slot tomorrow. I'll be in on Thursday. And until then, New Orleans, cheers, y'all.